And welcome back, everybody, to the Unfounded Podcast. It's been a long time, I think a good 5 months, if not more, since I've been on and gotten an episode out to you. I am glad to be back on. I'll get into a little bit of why that is, why I've had taken a little break there, and kind of fill you in on what I've been working on the show and on the side, and then get into the regular show. I don't want to take too much time just kind of reminiscing over the last 5 months. It's been a period of rest overall. That's what I've been guided to. And any of you that have been following the podcast, if you've been wondering where I've been, I've been hoping that you've been getting the same message as I try to take a second to take a breath as we roll into the beginning of the pod here. I'm nervous. Yeah, I haven't done this in like 6 months. And so every time you step away from something, when you come back, there's a newness to it again. And that's what I'm excited about, actually. The anxiety I feel isn't the kind of anxiety that's bad. It's the kind of excitement. Starting to work on something that, you know, I've been waiting to work on for a while now. That being this, and some music that I've been working on as well. Any of you that follow me on TikTok may have seen the song that I wrote recently, called Rolling Stone, and I'll be playing that on here at some point, probably not today, but when I get the kind of itch to, I will. But I've been working on that, on getting a finalized recording of it done, and that's taken a lot of my time because I've been learning the process as I go, and I've been doing that for a couple of years now. But it's not so much learning instruments anymore, it's more learning how to record them properly. And so yeah, that's taken a lot of time, but in general, the biggest thing that's been taking my time is just been me. I decided after last live reading that I posted that I was struggling with some physical, you know, conditions that I talk about at, you know, sporadically throughout the podcast, and if you follow me on TikTok, but it's something that's been bugging me and bothering me for years, in one form or another, probably around a decade. And I decided to take some time and really focus on getting myself physically right before I continued to go on and create and make more content. At the same time, it's been a weird time in the world too, and we'll get into that in a little later segment. I'm trying to bring a little bit of organization to the show. But that kind of gives you an idea of what I've been doing. I've been healing, resting. And to be quite honest, it's felt like I've put myself in a hospital bed for 6 months and not allowed myself to do very much. It's been hard to combat the feeling of laziness, but I've forced myself to remind myself that you're not being lazy when you're doing it for a reason, right? When you're resting for a reason, when you're taking rest that you didn't have for a very long time. And that's what this time has been about. I hope for you as a listener, like I said, you were able to seize that time and really kind of appreciate it for what it's worth. Quiet times can be boring, but that's also a lot of times when we get the most healing done and some of the best insight comes through. So that being said, I do have a little outline now for the podcast, which is new. Like I said, I'm bringing a little bit of organization to it because I want to stick with the format that I started about 6 months ago, bringing some videos, current events into the show, and sticking with the overall theme that I originally, now over 4 years ago, started, which was taking unfounded ideas and pulling them apart, right? Trying to bring the secular and the religious perspective specifically kind of into alignment, or at least seeing where they agree, and then seeing what we can pull out, what new idea, what new conclusion we can pull out from that. So with that in mind, I want to take a second real quick and thank a specific couple of listeners, actually, that have been supporting me over the last 6 months, have been supporting monetarily. So I really appreciate you too. I wanted to take a moment to point that out and to give you a shout out and tell you how much I appreciate your support. That would be Mindy on TikTok. If I'm just going to go with first names, you know who you are. I don't want to necessarily broadcast any of your other information out there without your permission. But Mindy, you know who you are on TikTok. Thank you very much for being a subscriber for these last 6 months, if not more. It truly does help me in more ways than just the monetary way. It helps me really in the most fundamental way, in the encouragement to continue to do what I do, seeing people actually engage with the material and treating it as something that's valuable. So I appreciate that. Thank you, Mindy. The other person I want to shout out real quick is Monica. Monica supported through the Linktree donation tab that I have on there. There's a little tip jar that you can go and support me through on my Linktree. So if you are interested in supporting me, you can use that as well as TikTok if you'd like to follow me on there. I have a lot of diverse content on there that's different from this. So, but Monica, thank you very much for your donation. I appreciate that. It really did come at a very crucial time for me when I was struggling and I needed a little bit of help monetarily. So that donation specifically has helped me go through this process. Mindy, know that your donations, your subscription has done the exact same thing. For anybody else that's watching and has wanted to support the podcast, check out my Linktree. It'll be in the show notes and then also at the end of the podcast here on a banner. It is Linktree / Chris the Sage, the same name that you see on my TikTok, as my TikTok name. So if you'd like to support me, go on there or consider becoming a subscriber on TikTok. There'll be new content coming out on there, but to be quite honest, it's going to probably be another couple of weeks because I'm really focusing on getting the podcast rolling and back in gear. So that being said, what I want to do in this episode, this is actually episode 101, right? I've had 101 of these things, and the last episode I ended on, fittingly, was 100, right? I think I called it keeping it 100. But 101 to me symbolizes kind of the number 101. At least the first thing that pops in my head is like English 101, right? History 101, the basics, right? The fundamentals. And so that's kind of the overall theme of today, is getting down to the fundamentals of what the show's about, right? Taking ideas, pulling them apart, thinking critically, philosophically, spiritually, feeling, as well as logicking our way through the world. So that being said, in addition to that, I have three different videos today, right? And they each are kind of on different subject, but I hope to kind of, intuitively, I haven't really planned it that much, but intuitively link these together because I do think they're related in some way. Each of these TikTok videos that we'll go through kind of hit me in different ways that I think will be valuable for you as a listener. I know will be valuable for you as a listener relative to whatever you're going through. So with that being said, first thing I want to get into is kind of this cool video, and I have a different setup here. So it's a video I found on TikTok. Right. And it's actually an interesting kind of, how do I describe it? It talks about the Hebrew alphabet, right? And I wanted to watch this to start us off because it keys on a subject of kind of interconnectedness, that the way that we view the world, and this is kind of a fundamental idea that I bring with the podcast for anybody that is new to it, is that I like to look at the world, and I suggest others do, in novel ways, right? Some of these ways actually aren't even new. Some of them are very old perspectives, but they're ones that we've labeled as too old or outdated or not relevant anymore, or maybe even fanciful. This is one of those, I believe, kind of one of our areas of lost knowledge that we've forgotten about, the depth of some of the religious writings and teachings, even the religious alphabet itself. So without further ado, let's check out this video.
The ancient Jews used Hebrew as their numerical system, eh? Each letter's a number. Like the Hebrew A, Aleph, it's one. B, Bet, it's two. You understand? But look at this. The numbers are interrelated. Like, take the Hebrew word for father. Av, Aleph, Bet. One, two, equals three. All right? Hebrew word for mother, Aim, Aleph, Mem. 140 equals 41. Sum of 3 and 41, 44. All right? Now, Hebrew word for child. All right? Mother, father, child. Yelad. That's 10, 30, and 4. 44. Torah is just a long string of numbers. Some say that it's a code sent to us from God.
That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's just kid stuff. Check this out, okay? The word for the Garden of Eden, Kedem. Numerical translation, 144. And the value of tree of knowledge, all right, in the garden, right? Eitz Hachaim, 233. And you can those take those numbers.
So, no. You know, like the Fibonacci sequence?
Fibonacci
is an Italian mathematician in the 13th century. If you divide 144 into 233, the result approaches theta.
Theta?
Theta. The Greek symbol for golden ratio, golden spiral.
Wow. I never saw that before. That's like that series you find in nature? Like the face of a sunflower?
Where are the spirals?
You see, there's math everywhere.
So, I thought that was very interesting because, as you can see, sorry guys, I'm trying to get in the hang of my new setup here. There's depth and interconnectedness to the world. This is kind of exemplified in this video. They're talking about the alphabet, right? But they're talking about the Hebrew alphabet. As you can see, it's different than the traditional alphabet that we're all familiar with. It's written the other direction. And what he's saying is there's a lot more letters in the Hebrew alphabet. So he's representing each letter as a number in a sequence of the letters. So A being 1, B being 2, C being 3, that kind of an idea, but with the Hebrew letters. And as he goes down that, you know, he takes those letters and he breaks down significant words like family, father, mother, child. And what he finds when you do that is that there's actually fundamental mathematical principles built into the language, the alphabet of Hebrew, right? Now, this is something you could prove yourself, right? This isn't something that's, you know, made up or fanciful in that way. And this is what I like to focus on in this podcast, because this is a part of the world that is so often overlooked. And honestly, one of the more refreshing parts of the world at large today is we're starting to turn the corner on this somewhat, at least from what I can tell. Very early days, but the world is starting to change. It's kind of like we're still in the middle of a storm, but you can start to see a little bit of daybreak. I don't know if you're feeling the same thing, but I hope you are, because much like another podcast that I listen to often, a PBD podcast, he's making t-shirts and hats, Patrick Bet David, and he's making hats that say the future is bright, and he wants to sell a million Future is Bright hats. So if you are a fan of PBD, go buy one of those hats. But the reason he wants to do it, I think, is he's a businessman, obviously, but the reason he wants to do it, I think, is kind of beautiful. And it's that, you know, he's tired of talking to people and seeing this attitude in the world like the world's going to end, like we're at its end, you know, Ragnarok. And he wants people to start looking at the future as if it's something that's bright. And I think this is such a beautiful idea, concept, because there's some fundamental truth in the link between our perception and the way the world unfolds. The way we see the world, what we believe it is, and the way it actually unfolds in front of us. You know, there's a way in which if we allow our perception to become too powerless in the face of, you know, objective outside reality, then we fail to be able to affect objective routes of reality. You start to become a victim. You feel like a victim. And so you'll start to try to change the world in this fundamentally kind of anti-human way, anti-Earth way, anti-people way. Because it appears that as if they're all contributing to the world being backwards. You know, if any of you are resonating with this. But when we look at videos like this, what it reminds me of is that, you know, there is a truth that is provable if you look for it. I was thinking about this the other day, that science itself kind of slowly, unintentionally, over the last 150, 200 years, went from kind of being the answer to the lack of truth in the religious movement, right? It stemmed from kind of the corruption that comes from bureaucracy in expansion, right? These kind of things in the Catholic Church and, you know, even the Protestant religions, as they broke away, you start to see this clergy bureaucracy that started to pull away from, and did for a very long time, the truth. You know, people lived under this power struggle against kind of this divine truth that the church held over everybody, and that disallowed people from questioning for most of, you know, medieval history and earlier on. So what ends up happening as science and logic starts to become a forefront, right? You have the Enlightenment and all these things starting to happen. You have people start to almost view this new way of thinking as the right way of thinking. And this is what always happens, right? New modes or modes of perception tend to be kind of shined up and presented as perfect when they're first introduced. And so especially the advocates for that perspective will tend to kind of hide the downsides of it or the pitfalls, either intentionally or unintentionally. It's kind of debatable. But what's interesting is that science ended up slowly moving from being kind of the truth bringer in that context. As it came onto the scene, it was kind of an answer to, as Nietzsche talks about, the religious kind of domination of the world and lack of kind of ability to mold and grow with the human being itself, so that it started to become a hindrance to that itself. Science says that's not something that's true, right? You say you're the truth, but that's not true. So what else isn't true? And this is where science started to, you know, as it won that first kind of fundamental debate, it went further in that. And as we've gone on in history, and as we've gotten more technologically advanced, and we've seen the ways in which this, you know, logical, systematic way of viewing the world, kind of linear way of viewing the world, can make it into a very mechanistic thing, which is, you know, more predictable and in some ways safer, and these kind of things. You know, we've started to trick ourselves into believing that that way of perceiving the world is the only and the best way of perceiving. And science itself is the I think the scientific world has been the culprit of this, the fundamental underlying, you know, driver of this, because it's been kind of drunk on its own supply. It tried to at some point, and I don't know when this was, but I feel like the scientific world, and this is more of a feeling, not necessarily something that I can prove, but like the motive of the scientific community switched at some point from being something that was at least grounded in truth, trying to find fundamental truth, to something that was trying to disprove something else. Right? At some point, science started to try to disprove the idea of God in the way that I can see it. And the way science was taught to me in the school is it left no room for it. Right? Even though some of the leading thinkers on the edges of science, you know, the father of quantum physics himself was quoted as saying, I can't remember off the top of my head, something like he sees God in this subatomic world, right? There's ways that you can see the idea of God in the world when you perceive it from a slightly different perspective than just logic. And oftentimes the most stunning insight is that you can stumble upon that while you're trying to find the most logical conclusion, which is, I think, what kind of happened in that scenario. So that as science tried to kill off God, it kind of succeeded. But not in the place it was trying to. It never found the proof it was looking for. You can't find proof of nothing, right? You can't find a proof of a negative. So its search was outright futile from the beginning, but not stated overtly either. Very kind of understated and internal at each individual level. But something that kind of I definitely floated in the scientific zeitgeist, right? This has led us from being able to view the world as if it these two ways of viewing the world, you know, both a spiritual kind of feeling, intuitive way, and logical kind of rational, linear way. Like, these things don't go together, but they do. They do very much. And when you start to see the ways they go together, what you'll notice is there's a magic to it. That's what I take away from this video. There's a certain type of magic to it. I don't know if you picked up on that, but as he's talking, you know, take the music away, take all of that away, as he's talking and he's describing the numbers, and then the other guy's kind of having his insight, that moment where he's like, that's the Fibonacci sequence. You know, you have this mathematician and this, from what you can tell, like rabbi, or at least a traditional Jew, seemingly from two different sides of the spectrum, sitting and talking over something they're interested in, an insight that they both have followed. You can tell that the one man is somewhat disheveled and almost disheartened by where he is at logically. You can see that by the way he's sitting, he's slumping, slouching. Well, the rabbi is kind of standing up and excited. He has an energy to him. So there's this way in which they're both approaching the same problem, but they're bringing kind of equal and opposite energies to it, right? And there's this crazy gestation that happens in that moment where they both see that they can solve each other's problem, right? That something that the rabbi had never connected because he didn't have the foundational knowledge, you know, of the Fibonacci sequence to even know what it was, can answer a question, you know, or at least describe something more accurately that he's already started to come to a conclusion of, that God is in everything, including the alphabet, the Hebrew alphabet, and numbers and math. Now that's something that is fundamentally astonishing, right? That you can find God in math like that. The Fibonacci sequence. He says at one point in the very end of that video, he talks about it like the face of a sunflower, right? If you're not familiar with the idea of a fractal pattern is something that repeats indefinitely, inwardly and outwardly, right? So it's, you can imagine a good example of this would be those kaleidoscope things you look through when you're a kid and you spin them, and there's like this pattern and it's repeating and spinning out every direction, or like a funhouse mirror when you're standing in the middle and you have this kind of equal repeating pattern that goes out and stretches out seemingly infinitely. This is the pattern of nature, right? This is a provable scientific fact. It's based on this sequence that he speaks of, the Fibonacci sequence, right? I don't remember the exact number, and I wouldn't proclaim myself to be a mathematician myself because math is actually one of my weak areas. But I do know enough about it to understand that it's been used throughout history, especially in kind of more mystical areas of history, mythological areas of history that we have a lot of questions in. For instance, the Fibonacci sequence can be found in a lot of old structures, like the Great Pyramid of Giza, right? Is proportioned based on the Fibonacci sequence exactly, if I'm not mistaken, right? There's all of these mathematical truths and principles that are built into the structure itself, suggesting at the very least that the people that built that or constructed that had those same fundamental mathematical principles identified and understood enough so that they could use them, leverage them to, you know, change the world as they did in ways that we still wonder how they did. You know, that's so. I think what I'm getting at here is, like, for instance, with that, with the Egyptians, I believe they had very similar technologies, or maybe it wasn't even the Egyptians, maybe it was civilizations that came before that. But I tend to believe that there were civilizations that have repeated. You can see this in the biblical stories and most religious stories throughout history, that we've been here and then gone and here and gone because we've kind of reset a couple times, be that global catastrophe or natural disaster, whatever. So that, as you know, at some point we had an understanding of technology enough to build grand structures, right? If we're keeping it to human beings, we're not getting, you know, kind of more out there with aliens and that kind of stuff. We will at some point, I'm sure. So how is this done, you know, and how is it approached? Because when you look at the structures themselves, they're not designed in the same way that our structures are, right? Pyramid's an odd structure. It's an odd shape to use to build something, to make something, at least in our context. You don't see very many pyramid structures for a reason in our society. But could that be because we don't understand a certain mathematical principle that they did, right? You see that kind of shape in most of their, I forget what the actual term is, geometric term, but the triangle itself is repeated throughout a lot of geometry in ancient Egypt, right? So it was a base of their masonry, of their construction, right? Of their engineering. It isn't of ours, right? And so there's I think these are areas that we can see there's gaps in our knowledge that even technically, like that, they had a greater understanding or a different understanding of the way that these fundamental laws, principles, mathematics unfolded, how it worked in the world, how this clock ticked underneath. And how they came to those principles had to have been, appears to have been more from a more spiritual nature. From what we can tell, at least the Egyptians, if we're going off the Egyptians built the pyramids, assuming that they did, they were a highly spiritual culture that, you know, proclaimed to have, you know, not only the pharaohs themselves deities embodied, but to have a plethora of deities, polytheistic deities that were considered real, very real, not things that were imagined, but real embodied vessels that could walk the earth, right? And did at some point in their creational myth. So what this is saying to me is that we have a lot more depth in this world than we see on the surface when we're just walking around, viewing it, experiencing it. And if we take a second to look for those kind of moments, like you can see in this video, those moments of magic. There's no other word to describe it, but it's this like differentness of like, whoa, the world could be grander than I imagined, right? Follow that feeling. Follow that feeling, right? So, I hope you enjoyed that first video. That was kind of the first segment here, but we're going to move on to kind of a general talk of the world and bringing us up to speed on how the world is doing, right? So, I found it funny, not like, you know, overtly funny, but just kind of, I find it funny that I stopped producing content right around the time that I did, because, you know, like I said, I felt like I needed a break. I needed to rest myself and heal up. And I hope you can tell too, just by looking at me, how much of a difference that made. But, right at the same time, the world kind of exploded in a bunch of different ways. I was trying to think about it before I came on here, having a hard time keeping track of all of the different significant events that have taken place over the last 6 months. But the major ones that come to mind specifically are the October attacks in Israel, in Gaza, right? The bombing campaign in Gaza, in the war that's going on there now, and then the ongoing, you know, issues with Ukraine. There's a lot going on with the presidential election that over the last 6 months, a huge changes. I feel like that I started to pick up on right before I stopped making content. I kind of made a couple of videos on, but I think are really starting to play themselves out in the world right now. So all that being said, you know, there's a lot of different subject areas to focus on. And, you know, the purpose of this segment is not to kind of cover all of those in depth. It's more to kind of just recognize all of them, recognize that there's so many things going on in the world right now that are chaotic. You know, the bombing that we are doing now through parts of the Middle East, the Houthi rebels in Iran, you know, there's so many things that's a huge part of it. And I, you know, almost breezed right by it. These are subjects that are incredibly deep, especially the ones that deal with the Middle East. Now, this is going to be a huge topic moving forward, something that I'm going to spend a lot of time and a lot of research on because it deserves it. Many of you, as specifically the Palestinian protests start to spark and you start to see all this content and propaganda from both sides start to swirl, it became very confusing on what the reality is. And I made a live right in the middle of this time, just briefly kind of telling people to kind of listen to yourself, you know, be tuned to what's going on outside of you and tune into what you feel. Because I do believe that there is truth out there, but it's hazy, right? It's muddy, and it's not something that you can find just by listening to somebody else's opinion, right? You got to find it yourself. It's hard. This is a hard subject. And I believe that's the point. What's going on in Gaza, what's going on in the Middle East, what has been going on for the last 20 years is a much broader conflict. It's all connected, right? It's not disentangled from what's been going on in the world for the last 100 years, right? But it depends on where you want to start looking. And that's what I mean by this is a broad topic. It deserves us going back as far as we need to go to figure out exactly what is happening. I don't know enough right now to speak on it with any authority on the subject and give you information on it, which is why I won't go into it any deeper right now. But just know that when the world is going crazy, it's not time for you to start getting louder. When the world starts getting really loud, it's time for you to listen. Right? To quiet down. To figure out what you feel, not what they're telling you feel. Right? It's more important now than it's ever been. Because there's more control being exerted now than ever. That control is overtly obvious now in a way that it wasn't before because of how much pressure it's applying. But I don't need to describe you where that pressure is coming from. You feel it, right? You know what brings you anxiety, what you worry about at night, what's changed over the years as you've seen the world change. And I think you know what direction you want the world to go. As long as you hold that inside of you and then apply that to what's going on in the world, apply the vision of what you want to see in the future and hold it like something that deserves to be, whew, a lot of energy, defended, right? Defend, like PBD is doing, a future that's bright, right? We deserve it. The generations coming after us, right, that have barely seen the world yet, the ones that have been in it so long that they're tired from it, and the ones that are still trying to get their shot in it, right? We're all together in this. And I do believe if you hold that vision of a reality where we all are seen, you know, valued, we can make it. But you gotta hold that line, right? It's a war. When you see warfare externally, you know what's going on spiritually. As above, so below, that's what that means, right? You know, a lot of energy coming through, a lot of emotion, but I think there's a lot of emotion built up in all of us around the world right now. It doesn't have an outlet. And it needs one. You know, there's figures that are starting to pop up that I'd also like to touch on as while we're still on the topic of what's going on in the world. Figures that are starting to speak out and speak up. Things that if you are losing hope in the future that you see, people that you can look towards, even if you don't agree with them. Because when you're losing faith, all you need, it's hard to get this out. There's a lot of energy behind it. When you're losing faith, all you need sometimes is to see somebody else believe. You know? You can be that for other people. You don't do it intentionally. You do it as a byproduct of doing what I believe you really want to do. You know, deep down. I think it's what every single person really wants. It's like what you don't want the world you imagine. Not the one that you've kind of built up over time. I mean the one that you dreamed of when you were a kid. You know, one with magic in it. That's the line you hold. Because you'll be the one that creates it. Right? As you do that, it spreads. Like I said, sometimes all you need is just to see it somewhere else. Figures, like I said, regardless of what your political views are, but I see a lot of figures starting to speak up or trying to at the very least. I think that figures like Tucker Carlson interviewing Putin recently is another big topic we'll get on at some point in a later show. I think figures like Vivek Ramaswamy are incredible truth tellers that are really exciting to watch and inspirational generationally. You know, to be from a member of the same generation, it's very, very enheartening to see somebody finally standing up and taking their place in the world. Because I do believe that's something that needs to happen. There's a transition that has been held off for too long, a generational transition that needs to happen. And us, I'm speaking of the millennials, we need to stand up. It's time to take the reins, right? That process didn't happen, and that's why you see people that are dying in positions of power still. We missed the boat. And I'm not blaming anybody for that. I actually think that us as a generation could use a long, hard look in the mirror, because I see a lot of content making us into victims, making the millennial generation into victims. And we didn't have this opportunity or that opportunity, or we got hit one after another with this bad thing or that bad thing or this bad thing or that bad thing. If you accept that, truly, you'll just become a bitter person, a more bitter person, and it'll be harder to go through this world. More destructively, it will start to get between you and your relationship, specifically with your parents or your other loved ones that don't share the same generation as you, right? Because for somebody to say that I've had it harder, you know what that feels like, right? Everybody knows what that feels like, because everybody is a kid at some point. That's why there's the whole cliched story of the grandpa saying, when I day I used to walk both ways to school uphill, you know, in the snow with no lunch, kind of thing, right? We all go through it. It doesn't mean we all do it, right? I do believe a lot of this idea that the boomers are greedy and the boomers have done this and the boomers that and the boomers, enough already. It's not the boomers' fault that you're not doing what you should be doing. And you know that. It's a cop-out, right? Just like I know it. Just like I've done the same thing. Just like when I watch those videos, I feel them and I want to agree with them. Because it's easier than doing what I should be doing, looking at myself, looking in the mirror and saying, hey, what could I do to take more responsibility, not less, not put that on somebody else? Somebody that's already gone through life, right? And is supposed to be now, taking the sideline, but can't because we're not taking our spot. Figures like Vivek are doing that, right? So I applaud him as a figure just on that principle alone, let alone his ability to tell truth. But another is RFK. I think that RFK is another truth teller, somebody that is, from what I can tell, channeling the spirit of not only his father, but his uncle as well, and acting on a certain type of ancestral kind of duty, which is so fundamentally honorable that I respect him, regardless of what his political views are. We need more people like that, right? I don't have to agree with you, but I should like you at some level. If I look for it, you're a human being, right? This idea that, we get to villainize people in our head and tear them down and belittle them and all this kind of stuff because they don't agree with us. You can do that, but you're just going to make yourself a lonely person, right? Don't do that to yourself or other people. But all of that said, bouncing around quite a bit, the world is getting chaotic because the world is changing. It's shaking off its old energy, right? And there's going to be some pain that goes along with that. It'll continue to get crazier. It's going to get way crazier over the next 9 months, but don't worry about that because I'll be right here with you, right? That's why I've been resting up. Because the time period that's coming is the time I needed to rest for, not the time period that I rested through. So, that's the world. We'll come back and we'll talk more specifically on a topic in the next episode. But I want to move on to the next segment here. So, the next kind of topic that I want to talk about is patience and healing. So it's kind of a combination, but I've talked about patience quite a bit on the podcast because, you know, it's specifically a trait, a personality trait, I guess a virtue that I've struggled with, right? I struggled with my whole life. Excuse me. I realize that looks like whiskey or something. That's iced tea, just so you know. But, excuse me. Patience and healing. Patience is something that I've struggled with my whole life. And when I was a kid, I was extremely impatient. Not just when I was a kid, most of my adolescent life as well as my young adult life. But one of the things that as I've gone through the healing process have noticed has become one of my superpowers, right? It's odd. It's a very odd transition. You know, it's a subtle transition. It takes place over a long period of time. It's one of those things you don't notice immediately, but then all of a sudden you think about it and you're like, wow, I dealt with that differently, you know? And that's why I talk about healing in the same context, because they're kind of synonymous. There's something about patience and healing that go together, right? That you can't rush it. This is something that I'm guilty of and have been guilty of in basically every other episode that you'll ever listen to. You know, anyone before this, go back and listen to it, and I was pushing myself to do it. Right? Why? Well, multiple reasons. Because I felt like I needed to. I needed to keep working. I needed to keep pushing. Putting content out there. Competing in that way. Making sure that people aren't viewing me as being lazy, right? Making sure that I'm not giving up. But what I realized, you know, when I took this break, was that I had done that over and over again. I had told myself, okay, you can take a day here, Chris, rest up. You can take a week here, Chris, rest up. What I needed to rest from was years and years of deep, deep, deep hurt, physical hurt. I was broken. My body was broken. And I needed to treat it as such. And so I realized that finally, thank God. And, you know, for anybody that is going through something similar, I want you to know that, like, you have to take time in these moments, you know, when you feel torn between feeling like you have to keep going, keep moving, keep pushing the rock up the hill, and feeling like you just need to rest for a year. You know, I want you to know that you have to choose it, right? I'll try to explain what I mean by that. You have to truly choose to prioritize yourself in a way that you've never done before, above everything else, including other people's perceptions of you, right? Man, I'm getting emotional in this one. You have to get to a point where you're not scared of what they think about you. And not just not scared, but you can let go of that gas. You can take your foot off the gas pedal, right? There's nothing to push towards. Pushing is what's making it worse. The pushing is what makes the hurt, the knots go twist harder, right? The feeling you can't stop. It's focusing on that feeling and saying, that's what needs to go. You know, when you're talking about spiritual healing, I think, at least in the modern context, I think I'm describing an experience that a lot of people have. Why can't I slow down? I can feel it. Hear it. So many people saying that, you know, like, wait, where did relaxation go? You know, there's some point you go from this period of time when you're a kid where you can just fall asleep anywhere, you know, and then at some point you get to a point where you couldn't relax if you were sitting in the middle of a Caribbean beach. You know, oftentimes you might find some of the most depressing moments in your life can be when you're on vacation in a place you're supposed to be happy and relaxed and you can't. I do believe that this world is designed to keep us from healing, to keep us kind of partially broken at the very least, so that we can be kind of fed on as a certain type of crop, right? We're a product of sorts. But that we need to consume things. We need to be hungry, right? We need to be unsatisfied slightly at the very least so that we keep moving. So if you are somebody that wonders why, where did my relaxation go? Just know you're not abnormal. You're feeling exactly what you were supposed to feel. Not in the grand sense, but in the sense of this is what this world was designed to make you feel, right? You can let go of that though. Move on to this. Next video, it's actually kind of an interesting one. I don't know where that's coming from. My phone was doing some feedback. So, another thing on the healing subject that I've had to heal from is kind of, like I was saying, the perception that people have of you. But the only way that I've been able to make money or support myself in any type of way, even the small ways I've been able to recently, has been through doing gig economy work, you know, DoorDash and Instacart. As a matter of fact, I had a whole problem with DoorDash about a year ago, so where I don't do that anymore, but Instacart now. So this video popped up, and it's meant to be comedic, and it's very funny. Don't get me wrong. I'm not taking it like, oh, like one of these overly critical people, but I want you to watch this. It's from Theo Von and Tim Dillon, and they're speaking on the subject, and it hit me as a very significant video because it felt like something was speaking through it. I wanted to speak a little bit more after we watch it, so without further ado.
Yeah, I mean, and they are also carrying messages.
Here's the thing. I don't feel bad for any of them.
Yeah.
Because I don't know anyone who does it. And I do believe anybody who's doing DoorDash is like, you know, in India, they have a caste of people called the Untouchables.
Do they really?
Yes. You just can't fuck with them.
You
can't go near them. You see them and you look away. That is kind of, and this, to know, Nick, don't take offense to this. But it is when I encounter a food delivery person in the wild, I look away.
No.
I will look away.
Tim, you don't feel like you're one of them?
A food delivery person? No.
Yeah.
There's so many other jobs. I just feel like if you're delivering DoorDash, here's the thing. I love them as a person. They're a child of God.
Yeah.
But they're in so much pain.
Are they?
A lot of times you can see they're in pain. I can't see
it. Really? They're just listening to Scott Stapp usually. I don't feel
I think some of them are in pain.
So, very comedic, right? Obviously, I wanted to show that because I thought it was kind of an interesting, it brought out something interesting in me when I watched it because my initial reaction was, like I said, actually kind of... I don't know what's the right... It made me slightly sad, right? And I guess is the best way to put it. It wasn't like hurt or anything because it's not that... It's a comedic thing that they're doing, but... So it's not like I took any offense, but as being a DoorDasher or somebody that's done these kind of jobs, you know, I felt, you know, obviously they're speaking about me. And so... I thought it illustrated really well because what comedians do and partially why, you know, it can make you sad when you hear some of these things, if it's ever, you know, there's a joke made about you or anything you do, is because what comedians do is they take things that are true and they say them in a way that people will actually recognize that truth, because most of the time that truth is something people don't want to see. They don't want to say out loud. So they'll take something that's kind of, ooh, like taboo that everybody sees, but nobody wants to recognize, and they'll say it out loud. And just the fact that they say it out loud makes it funny, right? Just... as kind of an explanation of what comedians do, at least from my perspective, practically. So that's what he's doing here, right? Is he's taking a subject, DoorDashers and gig economy workers, and he's saying something he's seeing. And what he's saying is that these people are subhuman, right? these people. And I don't think he believes that. Obviously, he said they're a child of God. I genuinely don't believe Tim Dillon is being satirical in the way he's acting here, but he's bringing up a real point. There's been something that's been happening because I've seen it and I've experienced it for the last 5 years as I've been trying to provide for myself, doing this, getting this off the ground, doing gig economy work, is that it is a industry that is ripe with corruption, greed, manipulation. Specifically, as a gig economy worker, you will get taken advantage of by the companies or companies you're working for. And it's an experience that I hope nobody ever goes through, because it's really, really, even though it can kind of sound silly from the surface, if you've never experienced it, having a company lie to you, right, or steal money from you, you know, myriads of different things, you know, fire you without warning or any reason, these kind of things, myriad of different, being treated like something that's completely expendable, really does a number on somebody's psyche, right? Especially when you're doing it every day. What Tim is talking about is the way in which people act. It's a very subtle thing, but something that I recognize and I notice, and I had to actually actively I don't know how the right way to put this is, but when you experience something like that where people don't even recognize you or acknowledge you when you're going about your day, when they ignore you, it's very easy to get angry, right? If you ever have somebody just ignore you or treat you like you're a non-person, I guarantee you won't be happy about it. If you do that over and over throughout a day, you'll start to unravel as a person. I promise you, you'll start to, one, actually attack yourself because you're taking on so much negative energy from people just ignoring you, right, and treating you like nothing, that you'll actually start to believe it, you know. And so you'll get depressed slowly as you do these jobs, because one, on one side, you're being viewed as this thing that doesn't deserve time of day. Most of the time, you're not being compensated properly because there's a weird interplay between the customer telling themselves that the company's paying properly and the company telling themselves and the drivers that the customers are going to tip. So you've gotten to this weird area where now many people, including myself, have worked far under minimum wage, many, many different times, or worked for free utterly, or essentially paid to deliver somebody's groceries. All but paid. I have paid to deliver somebody's delivery order in the amount that I spent to do it versus what I got paid, right? When you experience those kind of experiences, they do unravel you as a person, and you have to work on how to maintain yourself in a world that isn't fair. That's something that I've been healing from, to bring it around full circle why I brought the video up, is because you'll know when you're healed from something when you're able to watch a video or you're able to hear a joke and not get consumed by that feeling. Sadness, of anger, of resentment, of bitterness, right? Because it doesn't mean you won't feel it. Because like I said, there's a truth in comedy sometimes that is deeply sad. It can be horrendous, actually, some of the truths that comedy will bring out, but still oddly funny. That's why the military is known for dark humor, right? It's a way that we deal with these parts of the world. But it's also a way that we identify problems in the world. And, you know, in that vein, that's why I thank and love comedians like Theo and Tim, because that's what they do. Well, I don't always agree with what they say or how they say it. They push boundaries, and we need people like that, right? And on top of that, I thought that was really funny. So good joke, because it is very true. It's very true. I experience it every day, and people will look right through you as if you're nothing and then tip you nothing. But one of the ways that I've been able to keep myself doing that is because it isn't my end goal, right? If you're in a job, you know, regardless of what job you work, if you feel like you're being taken advantage of, if you're working in a career that you don't feel like is, you know, fulfilling you, and you feel this kind of depression creeping up inside of you, know that you can change that, but it requires this other sacrifice that I've kind of been going over in the patience and healing. It's going to require a massive amount of patience, because there's a healing process that entails. And you'll know when you're through it when you can laugh at it. So I hope you enjoyed that segment. All of these videos, I will have linked the creators that reposted, because they're all reposted videos, but I'll have the creators that reposted these on TikTok in the show notes for you as well if you want to go watch them yourself or support any of those creators. I don't want to steal their content. So, well, it's not theirs because they reposted it, but I don't want to, you get the point. Okay, where are we at here? It's really nice to have a little bit of organization. I hope you're enjoying it because most of the time I'm doing this completely intuitively in my head. And while I like that, I'm still going to do that for live episodes and things like that sometimes. I like having a little organization. It helps keep me from feeling stressed while I'm doing it. So, let's see here. Okay. We have one more video that I want to go to. And it'll kind of be the last one that we wrap up today. We'll wrap up today. But it's going even deeper on some of the subjects that we've touched today. It's going to talk about ancestry. I think his name's Wim Hof or Wim Hof, is being interviewed by Jordan Peterson and his daughter. And they're in the middle of a conversation. It's fascinating. I find it fascinating because they end up connecting in a similar way that you saw in the, with Hebrew and mathematics in the earlier video, having this moment where Jordan's like, wait, what do you mean by that? And you'll see it here. So I want you to watch this because it's that point of magic, that point of realization. And it's on a topic that I think connects very well to what we've been talking about today. So without further ado.
What do you mean that you go to the ancestors? What do you mean by that?
That is anything that is genetically encrypted in our gene expressions and closed up is because of a genetic past.
Okay, so why do you specifically refer to that as the ancestors? What made you think that?
Because we are the ancestors within our DNA. We carry every information of our ancestry, like 13, like possibly 100. Yeah. As long as it is not solved, it's still within us.
Okay, there's an old mythological idea that the hero has to rescue his sleeping father from the abyss, from a terrible monster. And yes. I construed that in the book as the ability to awaken sleeping ancestral forces, likely coded genetically, as a consequence of voluntary exposure to stress. Yeah. That took me like 15 years to figure out, because I've read all these stories, they're ancient stories, that first, the core element of the hero's journey, which is the proper journey through life, is voluntary confrontation with what is unknown and terrifying. That's the human way. And one of the consequences of that is the rescuing of the dead father, or the hurt father, or the sleeping father. It's a fundamental element of Egyptian mythology, for example, ancient Egyptian mythology. And it's part of the idea of the dying and resurrecting god. It's entangled up in that as well. And it wasn't until recently that I figured out that the consequence of voluntarily facing stress is the awakening of abilities within you that are part of our ancestral heritage. And so that is how you become a living avatar of the great heroes of the past.
Okay, so I hope you saw the video there. If you didn't, we'll just have the audio part for this time. I'm still figuring out some technical difficulties, but you don't really need to see the video for that one, at least. It's basically just audio. What you hear there, like I said, was Wim Hof and Jordan Peterson speaking, but what he goes into there is really fascinating, because it's a very similar kind of combination of perspectives. It's this secular and religious perspective. The way that Mr. Hof is talking, he's talking about genetics specifically, and how our ancestral DNA, and I'm kind of filling in gaps here because we're starting in the middle of the conversation there, but I believe what he's talking about is that there's a way in which all of our ancestral experience, so everything your parents, your grandparents, their grandparents, everything that everybody that came before you went through, there's an actual code for in your DNA. That's what makes up your DNA. Your DNA is the code of their lives, essentially. Is what I take from that. Now, if you take that concept, he's saying it from that more secular perspective, but he's combining it with a little bit of the religious seasoning. Jordan Peterson approaches things more from the philosophical, spiritual side of things. And you can see him talking about how he's gone, looked at the hero's journey and how that tracks with kind of unlocking our ancestors, right? So there's something about the awakening process in each human being is a story of us reconnecting and understanding who we are, where we came from. And that's a process of kind of understanding the people that came before us. Because as we understand each of those archetypal personalities, they combine to make us. And I believe if you combine both of these perspectives, what you get to is the idea that as you do that, as you go through the spiritual awakening process, you're doing a physical process as well. You're working genetically on, you're working on your genetics, changing your genetics fundamentally, or at least unlocking, if not changing, unlocking kind of access to part of your ancestral past through that. So there's a suggestion of the code that we spoke of earlier in the earlier video being present in multiple forms. It's another example of it, right? You can see this in everything. You just have to look. It's an art. That's why it's fractal. That's why we speak about fractals, because everything is made up of that same pattern. Just repeat it. That's beautiful. To know that everything that you're doing, everything that you're going through, all the pain that you've experienced, that's not for nothing. It truly isn't, right? I think that is one of our worries, one of the most depressing parts of the purely secular worldview. When it's void of God, is it also ceases to have kind of a fulfilling meaning. Many people will say it doesn't, but you can tell, I think, by kind of the general outlook of for the future, if you ask those same people what they believe the future will look like. Very few of them, from my experience or what I've listened to at least, have a good concept of what the future will become. And I think that's the certain nihilism creeping out from its hiding place. You see, people don't want to admit that they're nihilistic. You know, we all want to pretend in a modern world like we have the perfect life, like we're happy. What if you aren't? What if secretly inside you don't feel good, but you felt not good so long that you tricked yourself into thinking that's good, right? Then you'll run around convincing people this is the right way. I do believe that many people are suffering from what I just described. Right? This fundamental lie that we've told to ourselves so long that we actually believe it. You have to be careful of that. What you tell yourself. Very careful. If you don't want to believe it, don't say it to yourself. Right? Because it works. I think I can. I think I can. It's just as effective as I think I can't. I think I can't. So, I think with that, guys, I'm going to leave the episode there. I do have some tarot cards that I want to do at the very end. I'm going to pull a couple here I have sitting here on the desk just to kind of bring in a little bit of the spiritual side, because that's a big part of this podcast. And the standard episodes like this one are not going to be as spiritual in general, because we're going to, you know, be dealing with videos and topics more so. So I do want to include a little bit of tarot at the end of every video for you. And for those of you that don't want to participate in the tarot section, I'll put it at the end so it's really easy to skip if you don't want to do it. So, but for those of you that do want to stick around, we'll do. I just have a standard Rider-Waite tarot deck here. And I'm shuffling real quick, and we'll see what guidance we have, what guidance the universe wants to bring forward, considering what we've been reflecting on today, how we should link it together, and the moral of the story. What's the moral of the story? Right as I said that, a couple cards popped out. Heard all upright. So the bottom of the deck, we have the Three of Swords, but it's in reverse. And I'm getting with this, so here, I'll let you guys look at the cards if you can. There we go. Ooh, nice new camera. I hope you're enjoying it. Three of Swords. So this is in the reverse, so it's going to be upside down. Usually what that means in tarot is that, you know, it's kind of the opposite meaning of the upright. It's not necessarily a negative thing. It just means opposite. So the way I interpret this, the Three of Swords is usually dealing with some kind of communication or speech. It can be ideas themselves, more specifically, but you see the big heart in the middle of it, and there's three swords sticking through the heart. This can be kind of being in a three-party situation sometimes. It can be feeling like you are in a situation that is kind of breaking your heart, but you feel stuck in. Right? That's what I'm kind of getting from this card. But it's in reverse, right? Which to me means that we're coming out of this energy. You know, you see the swords, because it's upside down, it looks to me like the swords are falling out. You know, you see the light right here. It's kind of moving that direction. I feel like we're getting a release from this situation. So whatever context that is for you, in terms of whatever has been weighing heavy on your heart, the web I'm hearing is going to start to disentangle. So that's the overall energy for this reading right now. It's that interesting to start off. I don't usually get stuff that specific, but oh, that's a good one. So we have, oh wow. So I heard right away, darkest before the dawn. And if any of you are like me, you know that you'll not like hearing me say that. these cliches that get used over and over again, right? But they are true. You know, right before you get what you want, if we put it in plainly, but right before kind of the good happens, you know, it feels like you're in the peak bad, and you are. Because it's hard to see what's coming next. You know, we don't have the ability to see exactly what's coming next. Even people that profess to be able to see the future, they say so in a way that makes it seem as if it's solid, but even to them it's not. Right? And they're speaking on a belief that they have, and they're saying it so certainly that it's a high likelihood of coming true, but it doesn't mean that it's fixed, and it doesn't mean it's as certain as it seems. Right? It's actually part of the manifestation process. What you believe is what this becomes. We have the Nine of Swords in relation to the Three of Swords there. Right. Try to get away from the light so you don't have their phone. Focus. Doesn't want to focus. Okay. Anyway, you have the Nine of Swords here, and you can see somebody's been up late at night, not being able to sleep very much, something that I've been experiencing as well. So you're not alone if you've been having that. Grabbing your head, I feel like, again, your eyes are covered, so I feel like you're in a place where you feel like you really can't see very much. It's very dark behind you, right? And there's all of these different swords. You know, all of these different thoughts going through it, you know, through your head, you know, even through your back, right? Maybe thoughts of the past where you felt betrayed, or and you know what's interesting is I'm hearing coming up. So like as you're trying to go to sleep, as you're laying in bed, as you're trying to relax and let go, get that relaxation we were talking about earlier, I'm getting that you're having a hard time with letting go of some of the things that are coming up, because they're, you know, it's like recurring. These are deep traumas, many of them. These are painful memories, regrets, things that many of them you may have worked on before, even, so you may think that they're already healed. You know, there's like I said, nine swords, so it's a culmination of all the things you've gone through, and those are coming up at night, not to bother you or to make you feel unsafe or make you feel discouraged. It's actually coming up because the morning time you'll see this. Now, for those of you that aren't familiar with the Ten of Pentacles, the Ten of Pentacles is one of, if not the happiest card in the deck. I'd say the Sun is probably the happiest card in the deck, but the Ten of Pentacles is right up there. And it speaks more of physical prosperity, actually. The Pentacles represents your physical world. So, you know, you have this Nine of Swords, you know, at night when you're in the dream world, when you're supposed to be in the dream space, you know, when you're thinking about all of the things in the physical world that aren't aligned properly and stuff. You know, these are not meant to focus on or dwell on, but to be felt and released so that you can clear the space for about this. You might have a couple of dogs. The dogs popped out for me right away when I looked at the card, or kids maybe even. But I get very big family vibes from this as well, and even some people that are really excited to see the world changing for you. And again, I don't like to make things sound like predictions, right? I don't like to promise you big grand things happening in the future. These are energies, right, that you can enter into. This is a context for what you're going through right now, so that you know that if you continue to do the work you're doing, if you continue to kind of put one step in front of the other, Ten of Pentacles is right around the corner. It's meant as an encouragement, I think, for anybody that is listening. Your guides want to encourage you right now, because I think you've been going through a lot over the last 5-6 months. I think you've been here lonely and afraid. The world's been a very scary place, and it has. And that specifically your world has been a scary place. It's been getting to be a scarier place, a lonelier place. And that this is here, this reading is here to tell you that that's not going to be the case forever. And that's happening for a reason, so that you can clear this out. Pull all the swords out. Let them rise out of you, right? As you wake up, and then it's weird, as I look in the camera and I look at this, I see it differently. Every time you wake up in the night, this is very specific. When you wake up in the night, whatever you're thinking about, whatever dream you came out of, you know, consider it important, right? Try to think about the context. Don't run away from the feeling. I'm hearing that very strongly. Don't run away from the feeling. Sit in it. It's going to feel like that feeling will last forever. But the reason it feels like it lasts forever is because we've been running away from it forever. It's a trick that we accidentally play on ourselves, trying to protect ourselves. Sit in the feeling. Sit in it for, I promise you, 5 minutes, you'll notice it start to dissipate. But you have to really sit in it, look at it, stare at that thing. Tell it you're not afraid. All right, guys. Well, that's what I got for you today. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Unfounded Podcast. It was nice to be back on. I think I got, what, almost 70 minutes out of here. Just to kind of shake the dust off and get a little bit of something going. I want to thank you all for being here again. I'll be back on fairly soon. I'm not trying to set a schedule too quickly, but these podcasts will be coming out regularly now that I have everything set up. As you can see, I've been working on quite a bit over the last period of time, so... It's taken me a lot of time to get everything put together, but you'll have much more content coming out from me soon. For those of you on TikTok, check me out. Keep an eye out. I see you guys on there. I see you guys following and liking and commenting and stuff, and I appreciate you. I will be back on there soon, doing lives and things like that. But I have been, like I said, prioritizing the podcast because TikTok tends to take a lot of energy. There's a lot of people. It's a lot of energy. So this is a little more manageable most of the time. I will be doing lives soon as well. Most of what you'll see as we exit here, that I have information for most of the websites that I am going to be maintaining and keeping, social media platforms and stuff like that, if you want to check up on me. Most of them are not up to date right now, but you can at least follow me there for now. And when I start to produce more content, it'll be updated on all of those. So whatever your favorite platform is, whether it's YouTube or Rumble or probably even Twitch and things like that, you can find me on. So I'm trying to get this out as many places as possible, so when we start to really get in the weeds, we start to really hit on topics that people don't like us talking about, you'd be able to find the podcast still. If I was to do this on just YouTube or just Facebook or just whatever, you know what I mean? All you have to do is say the wrong thing nowadays, and your content's gone. Thankfully, there's a lot of different forms of content hosting nowadays, so you can also do that, and that's what we're doing. So anywho, guys, that's what I got for today. I want to really thank you again, all of the support. I really appreciate it. I'll be back on here soon, like I said, probably within the next 3 or 4 days, with another episode, more updates, more content. Lots of love. Bye-bye.